And a happy Vlad Jr. Day to you.
What do we care?
It's baseball, man. It's exciting for everyone. What's wrong with you?
What?
What's wrong with you? It's exciting. How dare you?
What?
How dare you?
What?
It's exciting. It's cool. It's fun.
This is an Ephus pitch all up in my intro right now.
It's good. I'm excited. I'm a fan of baseball. I'm actually just very happy that he's not in the National League, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, or in this country.
Yeah. Well, that too, because they don't even play baseball on the other side of the border.
Yeah, we worry about the wrong border the whole time.
the Vlad Juniors are coming for us. The Blue Jays come to hashtag Coors at the end of May / beginning of June, and I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there.
Oh, yeah, you got Vladdy.
May 31st through June 2nd, the Toronto Fighting Vlad Juniors will be in town. Hell yeah, I'm gonna go.
Like, imagine if all of those dudes like hit. If all like the I know Bichette's hurt now, but like,
yeah.
If all the kids of ex big leaguers come up and they're
scary.
You know, the 3, 4, 5 hitters in that order for like 10 years.
They really are.
Kevin Biggio, Bichette.
Who else? They've got one of the Clemens sons in that system.
Really,
if you have a father who played in the major leagues, chances are very good that you were drafted and or signed by the Toronto Blue Jays. This is your plan to build your organization? Yeah. Like, it seems to be working okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Rockies had Buddy Bell. Yeah. He's got a lot of kids.
Remember that? Remember him? The Rockies have had multiple managers named Buddy. Nicknamed Buddy,
yeah.
I guess I should say. If they were actually named Buddy, just like came out and father and mother were like, Buddy, how about Buddy? Just name this kid.
Hey, Buddy.
Hey, Buddy. Yeah. It's something you can name your kid. Hello there, everyone. Welcome into this week's episode of the
We're Right on the Rails
podcast.
Already.
Yeah. We are kicking things off strong. I am Tyler Vaughn.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
One of the things we were going to talk about today was a story on the Rockies official website, Rockies.com.
By the way,
Major League Baseball had to pay millions of dollars to acquire that domain name from the Tourism Bureau of the Canadian Rockies. True story.
It's like Cowboys.com. Jerry Jones had to pay like millions of dollars for like a...
it was to get it back from like a porn site, wasn't
it? It was like a gay porn site,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And
then it was the basis for an episode of The League back when that show was funny.
Yeah, that's right.
That Taco just sat on the
Taco Corp.
Sat on that domain name. But one of the things that we were going to do is talk about the story that Thomas Harding had up about the turnaround, the resurgence of John Gray. The headline has Gray turned page on shaky 18. And you don't often see this on MLB.com, but the link on the main rotating carousel of stories on the site goes to the wrong story. It goes to NL West trends that may or may not last. So, maybe it's not the right story. Maybe that is supposed to be. Wow. Huh.
Is it just ironic?
No, apparently that is actually the story because it is an entry on each team and it is literally two sentences about John Gray. I thought it was a whole story about like, oh, John Gray's done so much better.
This is why we have production meetings, Tyler.
Evidently not. And it wasn't a Thomas Harding thing. He must have just tweeted about it. It was AJ Casavell from the San Diego Padres, who I thought was way older than he actually is. I saw AJ Casavell in spring training, and I was like, oh, you're like 25.
You're like 0 for
Maybe
3,
he's
right?
Not. He's probably not, but, you know. John Gray, good.
John Gray.
It's not. All right. It's not
we still talk about him. We're still going to talk about him.
We're still going to talk about a lot of good things that are going on with your mind, our Colorado Rockies, because as we welcome you into this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, the Rockies are good again? ?
Wow. They've won 8 of 10.
8 of 10 since a 3-12 start.
That was good.
MLB.com or MLB Network had a graphic up the other day about the Rockies' stats as a team and their awful start and their stats as a team and their recent good surge over 10 games. But they even somehow managed to make the bad start look worse because they said the Rockies started 1-12. And I was sitting there like, no. It was bad enough. Don't make it worse.
Yeah. Hey,
it was 3-12.
Give us a little bit of credit.
You?
It was 3-12.
Yeah. Let's not go crazy here and make this 1-12 nonsense. The Rockies have kind of shown some signs of life. They are currently 11-14, tied for last place in the National League West with the San Francisco
Second
Giants.
Worst run differential in the National League behind Miami still.
But all that being said, they are a team that looks much more like what we expected coming out of the gate this season. 11-14 still only puts them 4 games back in the division behind the Los Angeles Dodgers, who at 16-11 have the best record in the National League. Which is weird.
It's a lot of parity. Yeah.
There's very baseball is strange to start the season. The Seattle Mariners have the best record in baseball. They are 17-11, and the Mariners going into last night's game had lost 9 of 12.
Yeah, they were 13-2, and now they're 17-11.
They're 17-11. So that's been strange. The Tampa Bay Rays and the Minnesota Twins are the other two division leaders in the American League. The Mets are a half game up on the Phillies in the National League East. St. Louis Cardinals, not really a huge surprise. They're 2.5 up on the Cubs and the Pirates. The Milwaukee Brewers at 13-13. I honestly was a little bit stunned to see, and the Rockies will be in Milwaukee, where I currently am, on Monday. But I was honestly a little stunned to see. I hadn't really been paying attention to the Brewers, like, result-wise, because I had just been busy being bombarded by the national baseball media, hearing about
Christian Yelich is good.
They're
mediocre
team right now. They have a run differential of minus 14. The Rockies are at minus 15, which is the second worst mark in the National League. The Marlins, by the way, so these are the worst from, you know, fifth-ish to second worst National League run differentials. The Rockies are at 15 runs under. The Pirates and the Brewers are at 14 runs under. The Padres are at 13 runs under. The Mets are at 12 runs under. That is like second through fifth. The Marlins are 47 runs under in their run differential. The Marlins have scored
in 25
68
games.
Runs in 25 games for the Marlins. Yeah. 68 runs in 25 games.
They've been shut out 6 times already.
Oh, my God.
But hey, the Rockies split
a
4-game series with them.
Oh my God, they are 8-17. A full
25%
of their
wins
have
come against
the
Rockies this year.
Yeah. Great, that makes you feel good.
It makes you feel really good. Yikes. Yeah, it's not like last year where the Red Sox ran out and then just kept running. Like, there's no amazing team right now. Pretty much team is like, 11-14 to like 16-12, kind of thing.
Pretty much every team in baseball, with the exception of the Marlins, even like the White Sox. The White Sox are 9-14, like they're just right back of that margin. The Royals are 8-17; they're kind of hanging around the Marlins level of incompetence so far. But at least the Royals have scored 114 runs this year. There's really like not any horrible teams outside of the Marlins and maybe the Royals, and there's not any great teams outside of the Rays. I would
give
say.
It time.
Like the Mariners. I it's fun watching what the Mariners are doing. The Mariners have a plus 40 run differential, which is tied with the Rays for the best in baseball. But you kind of wonder how long that can last for the Mariners because their defense is atrocious.
They also just added 12 to that last night.
Yeah.
So beating Texas.
14-2 win over Texas last night. you sort of wonder how long that's actually going to last for the Mariners. The Rays, I think, are for real. But it is a weird start to the season.
Yeah, but that's how we're talking about with the Rockies. Like the first 15 games were aberration, and we talked about it enough. Like, everything had gone wrong. They were playing well and getting terrible luck, and then they got injuries. It was just piling on at that point. And then the injuries weren't too severe, I guess, because they got some of those guys back. They got David Dahl back. They got Ryan McMahon back. They got Daniel Murphy back now. And lo and behold, they're starting to play better. Funny how that works.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so here they are at 11-14 and a team that looks like, they're ready to actually be the team that we thought they were. They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook. coming into this weekend, the Rockies with back-to-back series wins at home over the Washington Nationals and the Philadelphia Phillies, both of which were just – very fun series. I was there at Chuck's walk-off game, and that was amazing just to watch all those people in Phillies gear leave, who I don't recall being there last year when the Rockies were sweeping.
I gotta say, you really hate the Phillies.
You know, I don't, I really don't have a problem with the Phillies. I have a problem with what has already been created around the Phillies. People have started to treat the Phillies like they're just the Red Sox 2.0. And it's like the Phillies haven't done anything. Phillies haven't made the playoffs since, like, when was the last time the Phillies were in the playoffs?
2011.
Oh, so it's been almost a decade.
That was when Ryan Howard blew out his Achilles. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's been almost a decade since the Phillies have made the playoffs. And I don't think it's any, like, foregone conclusion that that team makes the playoffs in that division.
Not in that division. That division's the best division in baseball.
So,
or at least the most competitive.
The and for me, and I will say, it all stems from my feelings about Gabe Kapler. Gabe Kapler was not an easy person for our staff to work with at MILB.com. I've heard all kinds of stories about Gabe Kapler like that.
I worked with him one-on-one.
Yeah, you worked
with
him
at FS1.
Yeah. And so I just, like, I don't really... I try to be open-minded about anybody's fandom, but none of those people were there when the Phillies were getting their heads beat in last year at Coors Field. Now they all show up in their brand new throwback caps and everything. Everybody's a huge Phillies fan. It's a little irritating.
It was wasn't the Chuck Walkoff day,
yeah,
where Harper had five hits and.
Yeah.
I was like texting you every hit, just like, are you seething right now?
Doing the wave to their dugout, and then I waved to him as he was walking through the dugout and off the field. And I don't know that he looked at me, but he appeared to look at me, and I was very pleased with myself. So it was good. It's good. It's great.
I personally don't have that much Phillies or Harpers, or as much as you do, at least.
I don't even really dislike Bryce Harper. Like, I don't like Bryce Harper. He's not like a player that I sit down and expressly make myself watch. Like, if a Rockies game ends, I'll flip over to an Angels game to watch Mike Trout. I'll watch Blue Jays games now to watch Vlad. Like, I'll do those things. Bryce Harper, like, I don't have a problem with Bryce Harper. I don't dislike Bryce Harper. I certainly don't dislike Rhys Hoskins. He was an Australian Baseball League alumnus. He played for my old team, the Sydney Blue Sox. Like, I don't have any problem with him. But I just don't. I feel when a narrative and an aura is crafted around a team that has done nothing to earn that other than spend money, then I swing toward the other side of the pendulum and I just try to play the contrarian role to them. And so that is where I was with that series. And then the Rockies won 3 of 4, and I felt pretty good about that. The Rockies have beaten the Phillies 9 of their last 11 meetings at Coors Field. That's pretty
good. I mean, yeah. And,
going back 20 years.
And a lot of them have been by a lot of runs.
Yeah, a whole lot of runs. But that was a very good series. I mean, that was a team that came in, and I think the Rockies needed to showcase something. They were going back home at 0-5 at Coors Field. They needed to show that they were ready to take, you know, you go into San Francisco, you get the finale there, you win 2 straight in San Diego, that's fine, but you come home to a place where you're 0-5 and you're taking on the media darlings of the 2019 baseball season. The Rockies needed to show something, and they did. Take 3 out of 4 from Philly, take 2 out of 3 from Washington. Like, that is the exact homestand that they needed, and they
yes.
got it.
Yeah, it was weird because they've had a lot of struggles early in the season at home in recent years. I mean, even last year, in the last 2 years when they made the playoffs, they've really, really scuffled at Coors in April, even into May. So to have a homestand like that against some, you know, teams you're going to be facing, I mean, potentially and fighting for wild card berths and whatever, to come out and take 3 or 4 from the Phillies, I mean, you didn't have to face Jake Arrieta, but, you know, I'm sure he would have said something about it because he loves talking.
That's the thing, too. Like, that, I don't think that team is real healthy. My evaluation is Gabe Kapler is a guy who has an extreme sense of himself. I don't think in any way has the ability to manage his players' egos, and I think that team is going to eat itself alive. And that game in New York in which Bryce Harper gets ejected and Jake Arrieta, it's the third week of this season, and Jake Arrieta is already out there in a post-game interview talking about how Bryce Harper, in effect, and he didn't say this, but in effect was saying Bryce Harper was selfish and lost that game for his team. Said, I don't care how bad the umpire is, we need you out there. You can't go making comments and getting tossed out of a game. What was that, like the 4th inning? and they lose that game. They end up, you know, they're a half game back of the Mets coming out of the weekend, or going into the weekend.
Welcome to Fight the Good Fight, a new Colorado Phillies podcast.
You know, it's just this. It's the most interesting team in baseball to talk about. No, I just think they have all the elements of a team that's going to self-destruct by August, and I'm going to be okay with that. But the Rockies, I think, exposed them for what they
are. The frauds that they were.
Currently. Like, I just don't think that they are a great team. And the Rockies looked like a more complete team in the way they played that series. And that was big.
And eventually you get starting pitching that's going to start to help you out. I mean, it's all started with that with Herman Marquez's one-hit shutout. And then after that, the starting pitching has been pretty good. Over the last, you know, 10 games, whatever it has been.
That has been really encouraging to see.
I mean, John Gray has been outstanding so far this season. You know, whether A.J. Cassavell says it or not, or Thomas Harding says it or not, he's been pretty good.
Yeah, he's been really good.
Yeah.
The numbers
more than
John
just
Gray.
A two-sentence blurb on MLB.com.
Yeah. 2-3 record, whatever. 2.78 ERA for John Gray. He has struck out 30 and walked 13 and 32 and a third innings pitched. Opponents are batting .213 against him. He has looked outstanding. And the thing that I like most about John Gray, he's got a whip of 1.11 right now, which would be the lowest in his career if it were to stretch out over the season. The thing that I like most about John Gray, he has had at least a couple of starts where you could tell he didn't have his best stuff. And yet he's out there still getting deep into games. John Gray's shortest outing this year is 6 innings. He's still getting deep into games. He's still quieting teams. Maybe his worst outing stuff-wise was that game against the Phillies 5 days ago. 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs. He walked 4, but he struck out 5, and he avoided damage.
Yeah.
Didn't have great stuff against the Padres. 7 innings in that game, a run on 3 hits.
And his stuff has looked good. I mean, his stuff has looked like it's back to being maybe 2017 John Gray stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff-wise, he's throwing hard. His slider's been good. You know, maybe, like I said, if his control hasn't been the best, he's able to work his way out of jams, which was a thing that he was not doing last year.
That was always the issue last year. And I shouldn't say that his stuff hasn't looked good. The command of his stuff hasn't looked good, because his stuff looked great. The movement that he had against the Phillies was ridiculous.
And
his first couple innings, it's unbelievable. But
you give
being
one
able
hit,
to,
you know,
to spot that and all that stuff, that at times this year has been a little bit shakier. But to take the next step as a pitcher, to be that guy, to be somebody who has moments where you're going to struggle with command and still be able to go 6 innings and give up one run or no runs, that is a huge step forward for any pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, and he's working really well in the lower half of the zone and working more on the inner half too. We talked about this in the last podcast. The percentage of pitches he's throwing in the inner half is up from 38% to 44% right now, which is where it was in 2016 and 2017, because the stuff that he has when he throws so hard, if he commands the inner half and gets guys to back off a little bit, it makes everything else, it sets everything else up that he has, his arsenal of breaking pitches. So last year he was 38 on the inner half, 62 on the outer half, which was a career high. So kind of nibbling, working away from hitters, and it burned him. This year, he's more confident working inside, and he's having success. And it's the numbers that he's putting up this year in terms of his locations, high, low, you know, in or out or whatever, it's almost in line where he was 2 years ago, almost exactly. And that's a good sign. That's what you want to see from John Gray.
So the Rockies have a huge asset there. Herman Marquez has been kind of similarly to John Gray. There have been times where you could tell that Marquez hasn't had his best stuff, and he has still been able to gut through. There have been times where he's looked absolutely brilliant. He took a no-hitter into the eighth against the Giants back on the 14th. Then against the Phillies, you know, he gives up 10 hits and still only gives up two runs, all singles in that game on the 19th. And then against the Nationals, like, he didn't look great for the first few innings of that game. He still goes 7 innings, gives up 3 runs on 8 hits. He struck out 7, and he walked 2. So he's been, you know, I don't think at his best yet, and still owns a 2.54 ERA through 6 starts.
I mean, he was on the ropes early in that game.
Yeah.
3-run homer to Soto, and then loaded the bases with one out and got a couple strikeouts, and then it's over. You know, then he's out of it. And then he works through the 7th. Like, you know, he's shown the ability to be able to make adjustments mid-inning, mid-batter if need be. And that's what we haven't seen really from him. Well, we did like maybe second part of last year, but being able to make those adjustments mid-game is such a huge thing. His curveball's not finding the zone. His slider's not finding the zone. Throw more fastballs or throw a different pitch or whatever until you find it. And then he can stay in the game long enough because he's got this the stuff to. And he finds it in the third or fourth inning, you know, fifth inning, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden he's through seven and you're like, all right, well, that was a great outing by Germán Márquez. Seven innings, three runs, seven strikeouts. Like, okay, cool. That works.
Yeah. Good with that.
But to be able to make those adjustments like mid-game is such a huge step for a young pitcher to be able to do that without, even if someone has to tell you in the dugout, if you can do it yourself on the mound, the catcher tells you or something like that, and make those adjustments. That's what separates, you know, the young kids from becoming like wily veterans, in my opinion, because to be able to do that on your own or be able to make the adjustments before you do a bullpen session the next day or something along those lines, to be able to do that there and figure out what these guys are attacking you with, how they're attacking you. I mean, that's what we saw from Germán Márquez in that game against the Nationals. And it was awesome to see because he's the ace now with this team. I mean, Freeland has been a little hurt this year. John Gray has taken a step back in the last couple of seasons. Germán Márquez is your guy. He has to be that guy every fifth day to come out and give your team a chance to win. And he's done that pretty much every single time this year. And it's funny to hear, like, when I'm, you know, I'm at work and I'm seeing all these ex-ball players and they've got ties to their teams as well. Eric Karros with the Dodgers and Mark Sweeney with the Padres. Every time that Márquez pitches, they always say, when they talk to the players in the clubhouse, whenever they're talking about guys in the National League West they're facing or whatever, whenever Márquez has turned to pitch, every single player to a man is like, I don't want to face that guy. Like, even Eric Karros said, he told me, the one guy that the Dodgers just hate facing in the National League West is Germán Márquez. Nobody else. Everybody else are comfortable with. Márquez, they hate it. They hate facing him.
Yeah, which I would too.
Yeah. But that's...
I don't think I'd be able to get a hit off him. I'm just going to say... I'm just going to be man enough to admit. I don't think
the only guy that they've ever had that was even really like that probably was like 2010 Ubaldo in their entire existence.
Yeah.
Where the guy usually, like, I don't want to face that guy right now. Like he's too much for me right now. You got the Ubaldo flu. You got the Márquez flu. Oh, sorry, Skip, can't play today.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be me.
Oh, he's out of the game in the eighth inning? Oh, coach, I feel good enough to pitch.
You know what? I feel all right now. I think I'm gonna get in there.
I'm gonna grab a bat, you know.
So it's they've got a lot of encouraging signs right now, which is something that, you know, even last week, but especially 2 weeks ago, we could not even begin to imagine, much less discuss. So that's really encouraging. Pitching staff-wise, Kyle Freeland should only miss the one start. His DL placement was retroactive to April 19th, so he will be eligible to come back from the disabled list, I believe, on Monday.
Yeah.
And has already thrown a bullpen, seems to be feeling okay. Blister stuff, you just hope, you know, it doesn't continue to rear its head. You hope he doesn't end up having a Rich Hill situation this year. But Kyle Freeland has never really been it's never really been a case with Kyle Freeland before, so hopefully it's just a one-time thing. But it's there are a lot of really good things going on right now with this team. One that has been really fun for all of us to watch: Raimel Tapia, who right now is a .281, .328, .596 hitter. He has in total 16 hits this year. That includes 3 doubles, 3 triples, and 3 home runs. He has driven in 10 runs. He has actually walked 4 times somehow, which is like crazy for Raimel Tapia. He's also struck out 18, but still, he is the guy who we, and I'm not ready to take credit for, you know, Raimel Tapia and say, oh, this is what we've all been saying forever. It's 23 games into a season in his first regular major league action. But to be fair, this is what a lot of us have been calling for the last 3 years when he's been getting ping pong back and forth between Colorado and Albuquerque, is just give the dude a shot. Let him get some regular major league at-bats. The greatest predictor of future performance is past performance. And Raimel Tapia, at every stop through his minor league career, has been this guy offensively. Right. And defensively, he's showing that he's more than capable. Is he going to be an above average or an elite defensive outfielder? No.
Yeah. But does he take the best routes?
No,
he does not.
But he's making the routine plays, and that is all you need from Armel Tapia. If this is an organization that could run Matt Holliday out there in his prime in the outfield and act like he was a serviceable outfielder, Brad Hopp, Raimel Tapia is certainly better than those guys, I would say, from a defensive standpoint. And offensively, he's just so dynamic, and he is giving them a lift where they need it the most. Right now, the conversation that has started to build is, are the Rockies finally looking at him as a viable option to be an everyday guy? And what's kind of interesting is Bud Black, and I'm not sure.
The second question comes from that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the exact question was to Bud Black, but he had a quote yesterday that our buddy Hayden Ringer tweeted out, quote, "Starting every day is a strong statement because we're going to continue to use all of our players. It's a process. It's early in his career, and it helps to do well, but let's not go crazy." And Hayden, I think, perfectly said it. He said, quote, "I know a lot of this is manager speak, but I hardly think a former top 100 prospect starting ahead of a guy with a 701 OPS since 2017 counts as crazy."
Can't believe
which is
it's
true.
As high as 701, personally.
Yeah, that's actually stunning. It's because of the homers last year. He was a 2020 guy, man. I mean, that's elite. That's elite. You got to look,
yeah, look at his RBIs, though. Come on.
His RBIs. The conversation is there finally some momentum building to maybe a reality where Ian Desmond is not an everyday guy?
I mean, it's not Christmas yet.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll ever be. But
no, I mean, it's, you look at what Tapia has done during this last 10-game stretch where they're 8-2. I mean, he's hitting .385, 8 extra base hits, 3 homers. He's driven in 10 in that time. He's walked 3 times. You're playing the hot hand right now, and I get that. And Desmond's going to be in the lineup tonight because they're facing a lefty and Max Fried. I mean, that's just how it works. And Desmond has been fine against lefties, you know, in his time with the Rockies. So that's fine. Play him against lefties. But really, one of the reasons why Desmond was starting every day, of course, the contract plays into it. The veteranship with Bud Black plays into it. But, you know, at some point, there wasn't anybody ready to take his place. You know, like, who are they going to put in? Like, Cuevas wasn't really it. Daza was not ready.
Yeah.
You know, Dahl was hurt. Tapia was, you know, he wasn't doing it when he was actually in there.
Yeah.
So Desmond was playing because he kind of had to. And to be fair, he's played an okay center field this year, made some nice plays, better than a first baseman for sure. But there, you know, for Bud Black, the decision was fairly easy up until this point in terms of Desmond's playing time because nobody was knocking at the door. And now Tapia is, like I said, a former top 100 prospect, as you mentioned. He's hit everywhere he's gone, you know, besides the big leagues yet. He was out of options, so he had to be on the roster coming out of spring training. And it took him a couple of weeks to get going, much like everybody else on the Rockies. But now,
and he was getting sporadic playing time.
Yeah, but like, you're seeing the potential that he has now. And this is what we saw for however many years he was in the minor league system for the Rockies. He's always had this kind of pop. I mean, the numbers he put up at Albuquerque were huge every year. And then wherever Double A was at that point, Tulsa at that point, and, you know, whatever. If he's actively making it hard on Bud Black to stop putting Ian Desmond in the lineup every day, then, man, is that ever a win?
Yeah.
I know it's, like I said, it's, you know, he's had some success against lefties, too. He took Patrick Corbin deep. And Corbin is a hell of a left-handed pitcher. He took him deep to the deepest part of the park at Coors Field. So Tapia can hit lefties for sure, but if that's what's happening right now and he's going to be pushing Ian Desmond to the bench, that benefits everybody.
So that is a good problem for the Rockies to have. They also, you know, they've started getting some decent steps forward from other guys. I shouldn't say steps forward. Ryan McMahon has looked good pretty much all season. He and David Dahl are guys who were a little bit ahead of the game compared with Garrett Hampson or Raimel Tapia in terms of their major league pedigrees and playing profiles and experience coming into this year. But, you know, we've seen some flashes from Garrett Hampson. He really started to get it going last week when we were talking about where Garrett Hampson was. It looked as though he had turned a corner. Since then, he's cooled off a little bit, but you know, still a guy. He reached the 200 mark after the 16th game, the April 16th game at San Diego. He has dropped back to 183 since then, average wise. The problem with Garrett Hampson right now is there's just nothing outside of singles. He's not walking. He's not hitting with any pop.
Well, and the other thing now, it's playing time too with Murphy back and McMahon back.
Right.
There's nowhere for him to play right now. And if Tapia is hitting, he's not going to play center field.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's tough. But all that being said, you know, Garrett Hampson is still a young guy. He still has options if the Rockies decided to go that route. He's only 24 and a half. So it's not as crucial of a stage for Garrett Hampson as it would have been for Raimel Tapia. So that is all encouraging. And getting Daniel Murphy back is good from a baseball standpoint. Daniel Murphy comes out and in his first at bat at Coors Field, throws out a hit. He ends up going 1-for-4 in his home debut, but took a walk as well. Having him back is
almost got killed by bristles.
Yeah, which was cool. It solidifies the lineup. You know, that's the big thing about having him back around. But yeah, then he almost got crushed by the tooth trot.
I mean, like,
that was really something.
It was, and his reaction too was
was the most entertaining part of it.
Yes,
the headline. Murphy nearly tackled by tooth mascot on Rockies.com, and it is a cut four story. And their headline is, "You haven't seen fear like Daniel Murphy almost getting run down by a team of racing teeth mascots," and then a question mark in parentheses. You know, it's just an element of your lineup that you have needed to see back to put everything else in its in the place that you were anticipating it.
Right. Yeah. And we said, was it last podcast or 2 weeks ago, that the depth on this team is not major league depth. And when they lost that major league depth early in the season, their starters, they didn't really have much else to draw from. But now those guys are back and we're seeing what this team can do when they have those guys in the lineup. And the answer is kind of what we thought they were going to be. Is that they're a pretty good offensive team when they have all of those guys healthy. And the guys they needed just to play well, the young kids like McMahon and Dahl and now Tapia, they're playing really well. And Nolan's finally hitting again. And Story's hitting. And, you know, and Murphy's back and going to be taking some pitches, hitting some singles and whatever. You know, good for him.
Yeah.
Like, Walters is hitting, for the love of God. I mean.
Yeah.
And the starting pitching has been pretty good, aside from Tyler Anderson. Like, Chad Bettis has moved to the bullpen, which is a really good spot for him because he can come out and throw two innings and hit 95, which is something I didn't know Chad Bettis possessed.
Me neither.
Like, that's awesome. If he can be that guy, like the swing man in the bullpen, to come out and get a couple innings and save a pitching staff every couple of days, that's a perfect spot for Chad Bettis because the guys really seem to like him, but he's not a starter. That's... You know, he can't do that for 2-3 times through the lineup, but if he can get it for 2-3 innings instead of 2-3 times through the lineup, I think that's a perfect spot for Chad Bettis. Keep him around, keep him happy, you know, keep him getting paid. That's great.
So the Rockies right now head out for a road trip in which I think we'll get a good read on where they really are. They head to Atlanta first, and the Braves have been a 500 team. They're exactly a 500 team right now. They're 12-12. They're not a great team, and the Rockies made them look like world beaters in those two games at Coors Field, an 8-6 loss on the 8th of April and a 7-1 loss on the 9th of April. Thankfully, the Rockies got snowed out on the 10th of April. That game will be made up on August 26th, but those were the fourth and fifth losses in that eight-game losing streak for the Rockies. That was really kind of the low point. You know, it's...
I think the low point was the 18-inning game, personally.
Well, that's probably true. But it's a situation where now you get a chance to go to face a team that is... very beatable, and you do it on the road in a place where, oddly enough, the Rockies have actually played well at the new ballpark in Atlanta. Last year they swept the series, which was the first time they had ever swept a four-game series in Atlanta. That was a four-game series last year, right?
Maybe it was
the first time they had ever swept any series
anything
in Atlanta.
Atlanta had been a house of horrors for that team until last year. And they had that big comeback when, you know, they were down two outs, nobody on that Saturday, I believe, of that series. And then DJ like got a hit, and then they tied it, and then they won it. Like, DJ hit a homer. Like, yeah.
It was a four-game sweep, by the way. 5-3, 11-5, 5-3, and 4-2 from the 16th to the 19th of August last year. You know, this is a series that, especially with the way the Braves came into Coors Field and kind of walked all over you for a couple of days, you got to go down and win that series. And
that'd
then
be fun.
You get your first shot at the team that knocked you out of the postseason last year in the Milwaukee Brewers. That's a four-game series that starts on Monday. That's a 500 team as well. That has not been a team that has played good ball, despite the fact that all the conversation about them has been, you know, Christian Yelich and what a great start to the season he's having, which is true. They're a 13-13 team. They're a team that is, you know, right around the same level as the Rockies in run differential. They've scored 14 fewer runs than they've allowed this year. They're only 8-6 at home. They are a pedestrian team, just like the Rockies have been, just like the Braves have been, just like pretty much every team in the National League has been.
And
so look
at
all winnable games right now.
Christian Yelich's splits, by the way. Talk about Miller Coors. You know?
Yeah.
Miller Coors, 13 home runs at home, zero on the road.
They are pretty impressive. He's the first player since Dante Bichette in, I think, 98?
95.
Wow.
This is second MVP season, yeah. Or, you know, second in the MVP voting season. Where he was like a second in the MVP voting, but like negative war.
Yeah.
Because he went 40 and 100 and hit 330 because he was at hashtag Coors. But his defense was so atrocious that he had a negative war that season.
14 games at home, Christian Yelich is batting 417, 540, 1271. His slugging percentage is 1271 at home. That's an 1811 OPS. 12 games on the road, so pretty much the exact same sample size, 44 bats on the road versus 48 at home. He is batting 227, 306, 273. No homers, no triples. He doesn't have any triples at home either. Two doubles. A 579 OPS. He has struck out.
Are people talking about Coors there? Yeah.
No, I don't really hear that conversation. This is what's kind of strange about it. He has struck out 13 times against four walks on the road. He has walked 14 times against six strikeouts at home. Now, four of those are intentional walks at home, but still, that would, even you remove those, that's 10 walks to six strikeouts at home and four walks to 13 strikeouts on the road. Three when you remove the one intentional walk that he took on the road. It's a little odd. You know, it's almost as though players across the game of baseball tend to hit better at home. Call me crazy.
Weird.
It's a little strange. What else were we going to cover with this team? We had the Ian Desmond conversation.
As always. My wife needed to lay off Ian Desmond. So she said that he's doing a lot better lately, and I was like, I don't think that's true. But then somebody tweeted us, like, I asked if Ian Desmond was a witch because he always seems to be coming up with runners on base. And somebody tweeted us I'm not sure if it was Photoshopped. I'm not sure at all. But it was a picture of
him.
It was a picture of a witch, but the face was just Ian Desmond's headshot where he's like not smiling. It looks like a DMV photo. And I am not lying to you. My wife was like in tears. Like, it just kept hitting her in waves the other night where she just kept thinking about it and then just laughing so hard that she cried multiple times about that photo of Ian Desmond as from Spooky Desmond, Ian Desmond as a witch.
Ian Desmond. Anthony's wife, Nicole, is as sweet as human beings get. I still have no idea why she's with somebody like Anthony. But in this line of conversation, I'm going to have to disagree with her. Ian Desmond right now is slashing 177, 205, 291.
But he's had big hits. And I was like, no, we are not going down that road.
He's a 496 OPS. Like, Ian Desmond, for all of our bitching about him, at least he kept the OPS over 700 his first couple years in a Rockies uniform. He is at 496 right now in 22 games.
It's almost Pat Valaika numbers.
Ian Desmond's closest comp on the roster right now is probably Garrett Hampson offensively.
Yeah, I mean.
And Garrett Hampson is a guy who has a higher batting average right now, has an OPS that is
slightly
almost
lower.
The same thing, 484 versus 496. Garrett Hampson's also 24 and hasn't been in the major leagues for a decade. So, anyway.
Anyway,
get off Ian Desmond.
No, but the best part was I don't know why that The Nationals seem to rile us up a little bit more. Yeah. I think it's because...
Yeah, that's true. You were all over me about my dislike for the Phillies. You hate the Nationals.
I mean, I used to work for the team, not like the Washington ones, but the Potomac ones in the Carolina League. And it was not a well-run organization. And I was there in 2009 when the Washington Nationals were garbage. And I don't know. Like, I think it goes down from everything because Bob and FP on Masson are... the worst broadcast duo in baseball.
Very few series it is, where I do not watch the opponents.
It is an absolutely unwatchable broadcast. And listen, we don't have it well with AT&T, Root, FSN, RM, whatever it is. That's not a good product either. Bob and FP on Masson is by far the worst broadcast in all of baseball.
And you know, like, it's weird.
I'd rather watch Hawk Harrelson than watch Bob and FP.
I remember watching Nationals broadcast before FP Santangelo got there and thinking Bob Carpenter as a broadcaster, especially from a technical aspect, really not a bad broadcaster.
No, definitely. Technically, he's fine. Yeah.
That level of intellect and conversation on those broadcasts, it's unlistenable.
And to think that it got worse when Rob Dibble left, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That, what? Huh?
I mean,
the Braves came in, and even Chip Carey, who is, Chip Carey is like almost as bad, but Chip Carey with Jeff Francoeur
exactly.
is like a little bit better than what I expected. Like, it was an almost listenable broadcast. Chip Carey with Joe Simpson worst thing on the planet.
You can't do it. You can't do that at all. But Jeff Francoeur is going to make Chip Carey more personable.
Yeah.
Which is totally fine. That broadcast is fine now with Frenchie on it. But and like the Nationals Twitter account, like we talk about the Rockies Twitter account being as good as they are, obviously. But like the Nationals Twitter account, they had a beef with the Phillies earlier this year where they like made some "It's Always Sunny" joke or whatever. And then
the Nationals Twitter account is run like an NFL Twitter account.
It is. It's exactly awful. What it is. Yes.
It's awful.
Where it's really, really lame jokes and like memes from like 3 years ago that they're trying to bring back and nobody wants it.
And like bad emoji usage. And play puns. It's real bad.
Well, and you know, a couple weeks ago, if you saw some tweets toward the Nationals account from the PDP, like, and you weren't sure what the deal was there. A couple of weeks ago, I think it was on Marquez's almost no hitter day when Nolan, made a crazy play to save it, and then the next time, there's a base hit through the hole where he dove and just missed it and was really pissed off and whatever.
Yeah.
And the MLB account tweeted at it and tweeted out being like, look at Nolan's passion. Nolan makes all these great plays, blah 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 blah. And the Nationals Twitter account like posted a bunch of like screenshots of like FanGraphs like leaderboards from like this year.
Yeah.
Of like 3 weeks worth of data.
Yeah.
And like screamed like tweet about Anthony Rendon, you cowards.
Yeah.
To the sure went
over, I'm sure that went over great. Knowing what I know about the MLB social media people, sure that went over great to just have a team feed just outright being insubordinate toward the MLB feed. That's a great look.
Yeah. MLB at the top just loves their clients going rogue.
That was terrific.
And then, since then, Rendon's been hurt and he had a hit streak, then it was snapped and he hasn't got a hit since. And Nolan has been Nolan Arenado since then, making great plays on defense, hitting home runs, whatever. And so that's why after Nolan made the great double play to end the game, as well as hitting the winning home run, that's why people tweeted about Nolan Arenado to the @Nationals account. Didn't hear back from them.
They did not. They did not get back to us on that.
Yeah, and then then Rendon didn't play the whole game, the whole series with the Nationals. It's too bad.
They also, my favorite thing was on Wednesday in the series finale. They tweeted after the home run for Victor Robles. They tweeted about that.
Soto. Yeah,
or Juan Soto, and then that was the last tweet until the final score. that was the third inning.
Well, no, it was and also like when Jake Knoll had the RBI single or whatever, and they said, "Oh, more like Rake Knoll," and that was it. And so the Rockies after Chuck's home run tweeted like more like I don't know, like
it's a
crush nasty or something like that, like with a little
touch
like
all time might, or maybe we should say Chuck 'em all time.
There you go. Yeah. And also, and then on top of that, The Washington Post is, oh God,
awful.
They are the most coorsy coors who coors who ever coorsed.
Yeah.
Those people. Tom Boswell has been on record saying that no Rocky should ever win the batting average crown because of Coors Field.
Yeah.
That Daniel Murphy, ironically, got robbed by DJ LeMahieu a few years back. And then on, was it Monday, the recap of the loss that the Nationals had that Monday, it mentioned Coors Field like every other word, pretty much. Saying the Nats only lost because of Coors Field. And that is not a new thing for the Washington Post. They do that all the time. So, when all those things get piled on top of each other, I really, really despise the Nationals. Yeah. Like, they really rub me the wrong way.
They really got under your skin.
They did. Yeah. Yes.
They did.
Yes.
Plus,
just one more knife in the back of Art Silber, you know?
Yeah. He's still alive.
Guy who owns the Potomac Nationals.
He's still alive. And he's getting his new ballpark.
Good for him.
Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Number 42. Only him and Mariano.
That was a fun series to win. That was a good one. That was a good one to wrap up.
Yes.
There was something else that I was gonna add in there about something with the Washington Post. I don't know. But that was pretty comical, and it's pretty fun to troll. Especially the team feeds that you're pretty positive are not going to come back at you. it's just like you can hit on Hail Marys there all the time. I actually thought that they were going to troll us because it was a one-run game going to the seventh, and the Nationals had to go to the bullpen in the Saturday
game.
Or in the Tuesday game. And I was very excited about that bullpen and tweeted out like, oh man, here comes,
because their bullpen's been terrible.
Their bullpen came into the series, I think, with a 7.40 ERA.
Yeah. And then blew it on Monday. And
then they ended up being fine on Tuesday. And I was like, well, damn it. There goes this funny joke. But all of that to say, the Rockies are in a good spot right now. So these next seven games, I think we're going to get a good read on where they are for this run through May, because the April schedule, when we talked about this real early on in the season, after you got past that Marlins series, with the exception of the Giants and Padres, and neither of those are easy places to go.
Yeah, and the Padres are better now. I mean,
and the Padres are a better team, and the Giants have the same record as the Rockies right now. Like, the Giants have not been a dumpster fire. But you go to the Rays. That's a team with that's maybe the best team in baseball right now. I know the Mariners have a slightly better record, but the Rays are ridiculous at the moment.
Oh, the Rays are the best winning percentage in baseball. I mean,
Then you had two division winners, the Dodgers and Braves. Then you get the Giants on the road, a place where you never play well. Padres on the road, they ended up winning both those games. And then you get the darlings of the champions of the offseason with the Philadelphia Phillies, and another team that a lot of people are predicting to win a division this year in the Nationals. Then on the road, two division winners in Atlanta and Milwaukee. Like, it's not an easy schedule. The weirdest thing about this schedule, the Rockies will not see the Arizona Diamondbacks until next week back
That's
at home.
That's so weird.
That's the first time that the Rockies – it has felt like for every year for the past decade, they start with them and they play them 95 times in the month of April. Like, it's every other week.
Well, and then the Brewers –
four-game series.
Yeah, the Brewers, like 17 of their first 26 were against the Dodgers and Cardinals.
Yeah, what?
Like, the Brewers are done with the Dodgers now.
That's so weird.
Yeah, the NLCS from last year, the seven matchups they had this year are already done with, and it's the third week of April. That's dumb as hell.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good scheduling. It's also the Phillies and Mets, the big feud that they had this week, they won't see each other until the middle of June now. Huh? What?
Cool.
What? But so I think the Rockies, if you can make some headway on this road trip, you get seven games through Atlanta, Milwaukee. Then you come home and you have a very, very winnable homestand. Three against Arizona, three against San Francisco, three against San Diego. That's nine games over a 10-day span at home. That's the type of homestand that you look at and think they should go 7-3 or 8-2.
Yeah.
That's one of those homestands. And then it's at Boston for two, at Philly for three, at Pittsburgh for three. So, you know, this is where the schedule levels out a lot. They get Baltimore after that, then Arizona and Toronto, then they go to the Cubs and the Mets, then they get the Cubs at home, then it's the Padres and D-backs again. Like, until mid-June, they've really got a stretch of time where it's like, all right, now you can breathe a little bit. You're going to be playing some teams that it's not like, well, this team could very easily be in its LCS or World Series.
Well, and so far, Arizona's been just annoying enough to be good. I mean, they're 15-11. They've won a lot of close games. Like, their offense has shown it's competent enough. They're, you know, Greg Holland has not given up a run yet, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that.
Ah, Greg Holland.
Remember, like Greg Holland looks really good so far.
Dang it.
Oddly enough.
Lame.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, this, I think we'll get a good read on where this team is over the next couple of weeks. And I really think that this road trip will probably show us a lot about where the Rockies are as they head into the meat of this season. Yeah, Greg Holland's total numbers, by the way, 13 strikeouts and 3 walks in 8 innings, 0.63 whip, 0.77 opponent's average.
Yeah, man, he's been really good.
How about Kirby Yates for the Padres? The Padres have won, what have the Padres won now? 14 games. I think Kirby Yates has 12 saves.
He does. He leads the league. They've won, like, every one of their wins has been pretty much by one run.
And the Tigers are, yeah, like, just as weird in that category. The Tigers, in total as a team right now, 12-12 overall. And I believe, if memory serves there, that they have 11 saves. Shane Green has 11 saves and 12 wins for that team.
Padres have the best record in one-run games. They're 6-2. That bullpen with you know, Yates, and then, you know, the prettiest man in baseball, Trey Wingenter. He looks like a lunch lady.
You're mean. You're a mean person.
Hey, man. Like, we can't all be pretty.
You're a terrible person. Yeah, God knows. You know very well how it is to not be pretty.
I'm saying, yeah. Like, half of this podcast is gorgeous, and the other half is, you know. Yeah.
Thank you. I think that the biggest thing to take away from all of this, though, is just that, like, they've righted the ship.
Yes.
That's, like, just the fact that it's finally a point where we, all right, they're 3 games under 500.
It was teetering there for a while.
It really was. But the Rockies right now have a very realistic shot to leave the month of April over 500. And when they were 3-12, none of us would have predicted that. I'm not saying that they will, because they have to win out the month.
Sure.
But that's, you know, they could. Right now, they are 11-14. They could leave this month somehow above water.
There was nothing going right 2 weeks ago. Like, nothing at all. And there were no signs of anything going right.
That was maybe the scariest thing, was it was like they felt thin in depth, and you didn't see anything that was coming to save
and
them.
Everybody was pressing.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It looked like Daniel Murphy was a long ways off. Daniel Murphy just kind of, like, appeared. By the way, like, it seemed for a while, like, it was like, oh, Daniel Murphy, he could miss like 6 weeks, and then all of a sudden one day it was like, oh, Daniel Murphy is rehabbing with Albuquerque tonight.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's just like on a plane back to Denver. Like, what?
I was way more worried about David Dahl. I mean,
yeah,
a core injury with his history,
David Dahl's track record.
Like, I thought, like, oh, David Dahl's gonna be on the shelf for 2 months. Like, David Dahl's not really a 10-day IL kind of guy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And thank God he was there. Nolan Arenado has been fantastic for the Rockies. That's been a really cool thing to see as well, that he has really started to put himself into Nolan strata. He's at a 278 average and a 791 OPS now. He's got 4 homers, 17 RBIs. Like, he's really, really started to look very good. One thing that I think we're going to continue to watch as the season goes along, we talked about this last week, he has stayed right on with that 1-to-1 strikeouts to walk,
which is crazy. That's not something you expect.
He's never really done that before in his career.
No.
His best numbers, and we talked about this a week ago, 103 strikeouts to 68 walks in 2016. That's his best showing really throughout his career. And that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But right now, If that is something that Nolan adds to his resume this year, that all of a sudden he's going to be a guy who can walk as much as he strikes out, like, how does he keep getting better?
Well,
I remember a few years ago, Jonah Carey wrote a story about, like, oh, Nolan Arenado is a great player. The one thing that he hasn't been able to do yet is hit home runs to the opposite field. And then he did that. Like, the next week, his first one to the opposite field, and now he does that with somewhat regularity.
Well, and,
man.
Yeah, and in this time, like, he's not getting himself opportunities to strike out, which is all a big part of not striking out. If you don't get to 2 strike counts, better chance you're not going to strike out. Hey, how that works.
Yeah.
But he's swinging earlier in the count, and really in the last 10 games since that first home run that he hit, in that time he's slashing 333, 375, 722, 4 homers, 11 runs batted in. He's only struck out 2 times in the last, you know, 9 games, because he sat out one of those games. 2 times in the last 9 games with 3 walks.
Pretty good.
He's swinging earlier in counts, which is giving him, you know, clearly he's seeing better pitches to hit over the last nine games. And crazy that when he starts hitting, the Rockies start hitting as a team.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That is incredible. It's a weird sport, man. It is a weird sport. A
lot of peaks and valleys.
It is very accurate that it's all contagious. And for the Rockies, thankfully, they have started to get some things figured out, and they have had some dudes finally bringing it along. And with all of that, the road trip begins tonight in Atlanta as the Rockies will open up a three-game series against the Atlanta Braves.
And you'll see Max Fried, and Max Fried has got really good stuff.
Yeah, yeah, Max Fried is.
He's a lefty that throws mid-upper 90s with a wipeout hard, high spin rate curveball. So that should be fun tonight for the Rockies.
Antonio Senzatella is the guy on the other side in that matchup tonight, and Senzatella's been good, but he's also Senzatella is also kind of the guy who, like, when he leaves a game, you're like, "Oof, we got away with another one."
But also, Senzatella has proven that, like, you kind of know what you're getting from Antonio Senzatella.
Yeah, he's steady. He's very steady,
and I think that is I'd prefer him in the rotation more than someone like Chad Bettis.
Yeah.
And we've been on the Senzatella to the bullpen train for a long time because he really only has two pitches. He doesn't throw particularly that hard. He's not a blowout guy in terms of, you know, throwing it by people. But I don't know, man. We're seeing what he can give you. And right now, I think it's
– if you're relying on that as a number four, number five, it's fine. Yeah. Yeah,
because right now, dependable. If Freeland's only out for a handful of more days, you have Marquez, you have Freeland, you have a – hopefully resurgent John Gray.
Yeah.
Then if you have Senzatella, and then that's the question mark is the next one. Is Tyler Anderson going to be that guy? Signs point to no right now. He'll start Sunday in Atlanta opposite former Denver product Kevin Gausman. Mike Foltynewicz will make his first start for the Braves this weekend. Their ace from last year. He throws super hard, but he's been sidelined with an injury this year. He'll face John Gray on Saturday. That should be a fun one. Hello, Zoe. And then, that fifth spot is, you know, Jeff Hoffman showed flashes the other day at the Nationals.
First couple innings were awesome. Filthy.
Then he ran into trouble and gave up four runs. And Victor Robles had the big three-run double in that one. And then Bud Black came out and had the longest mound visit I've ever seen.
That was so weird. How was that not broken up?
Well, I think that the umpire was giving Bud the benefit of the doubt there. And Bud was having some strong words for Jeff Hoffman. And after that, I think Hoffman gave up a sack fly and then was cruised for the next two innings.
Yeah.
So whatever Bud said, it seemed to work. And, you know, Hoffman has the stuff to be a big leaguer, just never really put it together. But if he's, you know, another one of those guys that could be a bullpen type too, to come and get a couple innings and throw 99, like, hey, you can be that guy too. But until someone like maybe Peter Lambert is ready, you know, who knows? But yeah, that fifth spot, the Tyler Anderson spot right now, I'm not sure how much more of a leash he's going to have.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of wonder what the conversations are about him behind closed doors, which is unfortunate because Tyler Anderson has had some really, really good runs in a Rockies uniform over the last few seasons.
He started well in the playoffs last year for this team.
When he is not on, he doesn't have the – and we've discussed this – he doesn't have the stuff to be not on.
Yes.
Whereas other guys, you know, John Gray and Herman Marquez and Kyle Freeland, you can get away with that when you're throwing 96, 98 and you've got crazy movement. If Tyler Anderson doesn't have it, and then all of a sudden he's just a 90 to 92, 93 guy over the heart of the plate, that's not
– Yeah, that's not
that
good.
Doesn't last long
or,
in a major league.
Or worse, an 89, 90, 91 guy over the heart of the plate.
It's just we can finally all breathe as Rockies fans.
Yes.
And that is a very good alternate reality to what we were experiencing just a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah. You're going to be in town, not next week, 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, May 10th through the 12th. I will be in Denver if anyone wants to catch these hands.
Hopefully, I will be in town as well. I'm not sure yet, but
I'll definitely be going to the Saturday and Sunday games against the Padres that weekend. I think the wife and I might be heading up to our place up in Victor. So, for on that Friday night with my folks.
Sure. So, we'll have a little bit more of an idea if we're going to get to do a live PDP by next week. Hopefully it depends on my broadcast schedule, but
yeah. Am I rooting for DU then, right? DU lacrosse?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You will have to this week and next week, both. You got to be a fan.
Okay.
Because, cool. Well, I guess you could root one of two ways. If they lose, like, everything, if they lose, this is, we're recording on Friday the 26th, they lose tonight at Marquette, and they lose next week in the conference semifinals on Thursday night, then, like, we're probably done.
Got
which is kind of strange to say, because that program is such a mainstay in the NCAA tournament landscape, but hasn't been a great year. Like, it's been a down year. They're still, like, the 10th ranked
transitional
country,
year, you could
a
say.
Transitional year. But there's only 16 teams that make the NCAA tournament in that sport, so not as easy to crack the field, and there's a chance that they don't make it. But they should probably win the next three games, and if that's the case, then I think they'll probably host a first-round matchup in the NCAA tournament. It just seems like a good business move for the NCAA in a sport that is so regional. If you have an opportunity to be able to host outside of the region where it's regional to host a tournament game, you would think that that would be the smart move. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it all shakes down. All hopefully right. That'll be the case. If it is the case, I'm going to have a patio at my house by then. We could meet
wow.
up, have beers and do a show.
Wow.
How's that? Sounds
cool.
Amazing. And all of you will be invited.
Every single one of you.
All of you. Just I'll give you the address off air. hang up and listen. We'll put you on hold. Something. What?
What? Idiot.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of the Purple Latazor Podcast. He's Anthony. I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you next week. Love you. Bye.
Bye.